Anyone who has ever liberated apples from Clopper's orchard at the foot of South Mountain knows that the ones you want grow above the road. These are larger, sweeter, juicier, more like the ones you find at the farm stand and in the supermarket. Shoot, they're not just the apples that you want, they're the apples that the other apples want to be when they grow up. And so you picked from above the road. Now, this bucolic understanding came to a violent end, however, one late fall day when I saw Mr. Clopper pulling out the trees above the road. He had cut them down to the stump and had wrapped it with a chain and hitched it to the back of his tractor and were pulling those trees out. "They've turned," he said. "Time to plant new ones." Now, the turn that Mr. Clopper spoke of was a result of an ancient horticultural practice called grafting, practiced as frequently in the time of Jesus as it is today. It involves cutting a small slit through the bark of a tree or vine and inserting a bud or a shoot from another type of tree into it and then wrapping it up. The resulting plant thus has the rootstock of one type of grape or apple or rose or citrus tree, but it produced fruit of a different sort. Thus, it was the case that more desirable but frequently less hardy fruits gained purchase in the harsh climates by being grafted into hardier rootstocks. This is what is on Jesus' mind today as he teaches his disciples about vines and vine growers. Actually, both Jesus and St. Paul use the image of horticultural grafting to great effect in describing the ways in which members of the household of faith can benefit from participation in God's family. St. Paul says Israel is a cultivated olive tree, and the Gentiles, a wild olive shoot, are grafted onto it. Jesus says, "I am the true vine, and my Father, the vine dresser. Abide in me," Jesus says. It is a process, therefore, of grafting and regrafting, of cultivating the fruit of God's vineyard. Now, on the one hand, this message seems clear. It is good to be grafted to God. Stay close, abide, take good root, flourish. And that interpretation is on all well and good, but I'm afraid it only scratches the surface. Recall that the dramatic turn in my orcharding adventure comes not from the flourishing of the trees, but rather from their destruction. True, the lush, juicy, sweet, delicious apples had been grafted onto the stocks of lesser trees, and in so doing gained purchase in the rocky Appalachian soil. But they had also turned, said Mr. Clopper, and needed to be uprooted. What was that all about? Turns out that after about a decade, the once harmonious, beneficial relationship between graft and rootstock starts to change a bit. The genetics of the root begin to overtake the grafted branches, changing the nature of the tree entirely, returning it to its original nature. Rome apples suddenly appear on a tree that just last season produced gallows. And the longer the graft abides, the more likely it is to return and become the tree of its roots and need to be cut down and need to be pulled out. because it has turned. Thanks be to God that what is bad for orchardists is good for believers. While old man Clopper was sad to see his prize-winning fruit succumb to the more banal characteristics of the apples in other parts of the orchard, Jesus and John seem to suggest that there is actually some transcendent value for us in this type of change, in the mysterious transformation that occurs when we, who have been grafted into the true vine, begin ourselves to turn, when we abide. Let's go back to the text for a moment, shall we? And for the moment, let us suspend any worry that we have about the language of fruitlessness and removal and casting into fire. That's fodder for a different sermon. Moreover, imagine that the challenges that you have faced to this point in your life of faith have been the very pruning that has brought forth the current fruitfulness that you are exhibiting, even today. Trust me, I've worked this particular orchard for a season or two now, and I can attest to your production. So what remains? It's just the piece about abiding, right? Can we imagine ourselves for a moment as the branches that abide? As the branches that are abiding? Us in Jesus. Jesus in us. What happens then? In the absence of worry, in the absence of expectation, as we simply abide. We are gaining strength, yes. We are thriving in an often inhospitable climate. But even more than that, we are turning. We are becoming more Christ-like. Even as we sit here, even as I speak, as Christ abides in us, we are beginning to bear a different fruit when we abide. Anyone who has ever liberated apples from Clopper's orchard knows that the ones you want grow above the road. But what about the ones below the road? Smaller, denser, and in far greater numbers on the tree than those that are meant to be sold at the farm stand. These apples below the road were the very Romes and Macintoshes that the fancier apples were turning into. Unbeknownst to the shopper at the farm stand or the casual apple thief, these were the most important apples in the orchard. These apples were the ones that went to the processor, sure. But these were the apples that paid the bills. These were the apples that put food on the orchardist's table. These were the apples that provided rootstock for the next generation of show apples. These are the branches that abide and bear much fruit. Friends, we are called to abide and to likewise bear much fruit. Amen.